This podcast is brought to you by Crokesbury Books online store. Are you a dying mainline church in need of transformation without your members having to sacrifice anything or change anything about the way they've done church for the last 75 years? Then Crokesbury Books is the online bookstore for you. Is your church divided over worship style, with the silver foxes, who actually write the big checks, wanting hymns from the hymn book and lots of Bach on the organ, on one side of the fight? And the boomers, wanting a rock concert with fog machines and a laser show on the other side? Who cares what the Gen X's, millennials, and that other generation too young to have a name yet think? They aren't coming to church anyway. Then Crokesbury Books has the resource for you. It's called Praise Band in a Can. We will ship you a 32-gallon Rubbermaid trash can and lid. It'll be filled to the brim with sheet music, 8-track tapes, and the newest high-tech recording doohickey called Compact Discs that have solutions to make everyone happy. We combine your favorite old hymns with your favorite classic rock tunes from the 70s. You can now sing the old Rugged Cross to the tune of Hotel California. I will cling to the old Rugged Cross. Such a lovely place. Such a lovely place. How about Be Thou My Vision, sung to the tune of Bad to the Bone? Be Thou My Vision. And everybody loves Crown Him with Many Crowns, sung to Jethro Tull's Aqualung. Dun, 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 dun. Crown Him with Many Crowns. But wait, you may be saying, that's not enough organ music in any of these songs. Well, good news. Praise Band in a Can also includes your great favorite organ rock tunes from the 70s. We include A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, sung to the Doors' Light My Fire.
A mighty fortress is our God. A bulwark never failing.
And To God Be the Glory, sung to the Animals, The House of the Rising Sun.
To God be the glory. Great things He has done.
If you act now, we will even throw in some music for that small but troublesome contingent of members who ask, but what about the kids? Let's be real, as if anyone under 60 would even go to your church. The last time that happened was when Dolores Jenkins guilted her grandson into coming by saying she felt a stroke coming on. Reverend Purvis got so excited a young person was there, he gave himself a hernia trying to preach a sermon hip enough to interest the young man. It turns out, comparing the 12 apostles to the Beverly Hillbillies did not elicit the young man's attention. He spent the whole service staring at his phone, trying to create a meme out of a picture he took of Elder Guthrie. I would tell you about it, but you wouldn't understand the joke anyway. When that troublesome group in your church asks, but what about something for the kids? You can tell them, Praise Band in a Can contains stuff for all the hip young kids these days. Young people are sure to not care about How Great Thou Art, rapped to the tune of Jay-Z's 99 Problems, or All Creatures of Our God and King, put to the beats of Kendrick Lamar's Humble, or Blessed Assurance, laid down on Nas's track, If I Ruled the World. Unfortunately, I cannot rap these tunes for you, given the ongoing copyright issues, which are sure to be resolved by the time we receive the check from your church treasurer. At Crokesbury Books, we don't just provide you with great book titles. We also are your one-stop solution for great worship service music that is sure to bring your church together as one. That is, at least, until all your older folks die, and then the boomers will just forget to show up one Sunday, and all you have worked for to keep your church open crumbles into disrepair, until it is later bought by a developer who turns the old building into a combination nail salon, check cashing store, and Subway franchise. Until that sad outcome occurs, make sure to order your books and music at croaksbury.edu, which is the website for our online Bible College bookstore. And remember, we are glad to send you ebooks. If you're afraid of catching the coronavirus from your UPS man, just remember, if it's a UPS woman, you need more spiritual help, because frankly, you're already doomed for your immoral understandings of gender. And remember, by ebooks, we mean a stack of Polaroids of an actual book held together with a binder clip and jammed inside the CD-ROM drive of a 1991 Compaq 486SX PC that we will dump on your front lawn in the middle of the night. It will be inside an old igloo cooler that we use to keep live bait in, and we'll have to duct tape the lid closed because the PC doesn't really fit entirely inside it. To make sure you can find it in the dark, we will set on fire a cross made out of 2x4s and soaked in kerosene so that you've got enough light via the fire of the Holy Spirit burning the cross in your front yard. We have noticed that this tends to upset our African-American customers, but we are pretty sure that they were just Jehovah's Witnesses who ordered from our website by mistake. We told them we were already a part of the 144,000, but it didn't seem to calm them down any. Next time, we're going to try and avoid this problem by dressing up like Casper the Friendly Ghost. Everyone loves Casper. We've already got costumes made out of bedsheets and pillowcases. Try Croaksbury Books today. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Save Me podcast. I'm Chase Peoples, if you're just tuning in. And just remember, I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm doing, and if you were expecting good production values on this podcast, you have come to the wrong place. What do I need saving from this week? Let's see. White privilege, heterosexual advantage. Oh, there's my maleness. There's the fact that I'm contributing to climate change. I am too content as a middle-class American. All that stuff is still there. I need saving from the coronavirus, just like we all do. I need saving from Trump's afternoon, whatever you want to call those press conferences are. I had to stop watching them. Even the late night comedians covering them just bring me down, man. Whew. We all need to be saved from incompetent government leadership. Well, I'm looking for salvation. I am still at this point unemployed. I may have a little bit of news about that coming up soon. Might be joining the streaming preaching hordes out there who are struggling to put their services on the live stream or the Zoom or the GoToMeeting or Vimeo or whatever you are using out there. I've actually seen some pretty good ones over the last few weeks. Shout out to Tabernacle Baptist Church, where my friend Sterling Severance is minister. Sterling is always an early adopter of technology, and it shows in their service. Pretty impressive. I can't imagine the hours of work that went into that. Peace Church here in Kansas City, Disciples of Christ and United Church of Christ, where friends Holly McKissick, Paula Lafferty are ministers, and put together a really beautiful service that was meaningful and live, and we all got together, most of the congregation on Zoom. I was surprised at how meaningful it was to connect and worship with other people, even if it was through a computer screen. Want to holler out to Olivet United Church of Christ up in Wisconsin, where my friend Ruth Bradshaw is pastor. Watched her Palm Sunday service, which was very meaningful and peaceful. A great invitation to slow down and take in the week. And finally, I'd recommend to you Circular United Church of Christ down in Charleston, where Jeremy Rutledge, friend of mine, is pastor, doing just really great work. Provocative, thoughtful, as always down there. If you want me to take a look at your live stream effort or taped service, just give me a holler. Send it to me. I will take a look and give you a shout out next week. Want to give a shout out to a few friends who have been promoting the site, sharing it with others via the old social media. Reverend Aaron Rollerson, or as I know him affectionately as Sasquatch because he's quite large and hairy, has been listening to my first few episodes and sharing it with his folks. Aaron, an Episcopal priest down in Alabama. I didn't know they allowed Episcopalians in Alabama, but apparently that is, in fact, a thing. Jude Hunt, my good old-fashioned Roman Catholic progressive troublemaker here in Kansas City, has been sharing it quite a bit with his friends and his network. He and I are talking about doing an episode together. Since my background is mainly Protestant, he's going to offer some ideas. Maybe we can have some of our sponsors include something promoting some radical mystic nun who was really probably just abused in nunnery of some time, to the point where she was hallucinating, and then people began having traditions baked about whatever Marian apparition she thought she saw, or that kind of thing. I don't really understand all the Catholic wackiness. I'm much more comfortable with the fundamentalist Protestant wackiness, but Jude and I are going to give it a try. And hey, want to holler out to Mike Jones, who listened to it on Twitter. Mike's a friend from high school I've reconnected with online. My recollection is that Mike was pretty on the atheistic, agnostic end of things in high school. I don't know where he's at now, but he's listening, which is surprising. Maybe he doesn't have anything else to do in Kentucky. I don't know, during the quarantine. But hey, appreciate the listening. Thanks to all of you for listening to the podcast. What I've learned is when you're targeting a podcast mainly to clergy friends, because most of your friends happen to be clergy, that they're probably not going to listen to it on Holy Week. It ended up last week that my first episode in 1 week's time got about 85. Now it's up to 120-something listens. And this second episode I put out last week, right before Holy Week, it's only got about like 45, 47 so far. Maybe people will tune in once Holy Week is over. Anyway, I need to get a broader audience. Let you know, in future episodes, I'm trying to figure out how to record an actual conversation. And so I'm going to be interviewing some of my clergy friends, whom I think are thoughtful and who have really great things to say. They're probably never going to write a best-selling book and end up on Fresh Air on NPR, but in my opinion, they offer revelatory thinking. Hopefully we can share a little bit. That might be something worth listening to. Well, as I record this, it is Good Friday, and man, I feel it this year. Don't you feel it? Feel like we're all already in the tomb, that the crucifixion has already happened. A friend of mine, the Reverend Donna Roseheim here in Kansas City, put some great stuff out this morning on her social media feed talking about how we are all in the tomb together this year, but we can leave stuff in the tomb. We don't have to keep carrying it with us and go on to be resurrected people. I grew up Southern Baptist, and so I got to tell you that everything in this Holy Week stuff is all still new to me, even though I've been in traditions for 20 years that celebrate it. Well, sort of. They make the ministers do it. They just don't come to the services, in my experience. So I can remember when my father, who was the pastor of the church I grew up in, had a Maundy-Thursday service, and I swear the members of the church thought that he had been possessed by the Pope. Doing that Maundy-Thursday service meant that we were all going to become Catholic or something like that. I think it eventually got done. I remember at least one happening. Maybe it never happened again. I don't know. But one of the things that's most confusing to me is in my liberal Protestant mainline denomination experiences, we would maybe have Maundy-Thursday, and some churches we would do Good Friday, but then Holy Saturday was just like a break where I worked on my sermon for Easter. I didn't commemorate anything going on Saturday. So this whole Holy Saturday tradition thing is just something I don't know a whole lot about. I read with fascination all this stuff about Jesus harrowing hell, the in-between Friday and Saturday, what Jesus was up to as he was descending into hell, as the Apostles' Creed says, and witnessing to the saints who are in prison as people interpret that vague verse in the second epistle of Peter to refer to. And so this is all new to me. I've been watching during the quarantine NBC's 30 Rock over again because I needed something to laugh at and bring my spirits up. The character of Kenneth the Page. In one of the episodes, he hails from Stone Mountain, Georgia. I think Donald Glover, who also grew up in Stone Mountain, Georgia, created the character. Kenneth the Page is from there. At one point in the series, 30 Rock sang a song that began, "Oh, everyone before Jesus lived is burning in hell," or something like that. And that's sort of, I think, what I thought growing up was like, that everybody was already in hell because they lived before Jesus came up and didn't get a chance to say the magic words and accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. Everybody except Abraham, I guess, because Jesus mentioned that he was in paradise in the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. And so I never quite thought too much about that. When I did think about it, sort of thought, you know, that seems unfair if you're born at the wrong time. You spend eternity in hell. But look, the whole doctrine of hell isn't exactly logical. Don't expect it all to hold up. I didn't grow up with the Apostles' Creed. I didn't grow up with this tradition. So it's fascinating to me. It got me thinking about a story I heard on another podcast about folks in the in-between stuck somewhere. There's a podcast out of the Boston, I think it's WGBH Boston, the NPR affiliate up there. It's called Kind World, and I like listening to it when they put new stuff out just because it reminds you that humanity is not as bad as you think it is. And they told a story about a Syrian refugee who, back during the Syrian Civil War, when it was at its worst, had fled and had made it as far as Malaysia, but didn't have a visa to travel anywhere else, and was stuck in the Malaysian airport. They wouldn't let him leave the airport and wouldn't let him fly anywhere else. His name was Hassan. He had been working in the UAE at an insurance company until his work permit ran out, and he refused to go home to Syria to be conscripted into the army. And he was there for days and weeks and just making videos of himself on his phone, where he was living in the airport, scavenging leftover food out of trash cans and left on tables. He was sleeping in a stairwell, and he was there for over 28 months. Up until a woman named Lori Cooper in British Columbia saw these videos, and she began working to try to get him out of the airport. When asked why did she start watching these videos and care about this stranger stuck in an airport in Malaysia, maybe she could begin to see Hassan as a son. So she began working month after month after month, got him out of there. Got him eventually to Canada, and when she arrived, she said it was like getting one of her children home. The image of her helping out with that young man stuck in Malaysia, to me, was sort of a Christ image, maybe, that would fit with Jesus getting people out of places they are stuck in, if you want to buy into the people getting stuck down in Hades or hell or the pit of Sheol or something. You're feeling stuck this week. Maybe the image of that nice Canadian woman helping that young man stuck in an airport might be an image you can hold on to of Christ doing something for you and you doing something for others. I want to remind you that I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not an expert. I'm not a seminary professor. I am not someone who has had anything published pretty much worth reading. I don't know anything. I'm just looking for somebody to save me, hoping that God is already doing so, even though I've had a lot of days lately where I'm wondering, is that even possible? So, just a reminder, you keep looking for salvation, whatever that means to you. If you're looking for somebody to save you, it is not me. I'm working on some social media stuff for the podcast to let people know when we've got something up, or sharing some of the sources that I've been using on the podcast in case you're interested in having it for your very own. First of all, I'm on Twitter, and the handle is SaveMePodcast1, the number one. So SaveMePodcast1. And also, I've got a Facebook page running, and if I've got it figured out right, it is public for anybody to connect with, and that way you can find out about new episodes, and it's just titled The Save Me Podcast. So look for that on Facebook. I appreciate the around 100 or so folks who have liked it so far. However, if you're like me, you get invited to like stuff all the time, and you forget about it and never go look at it again. Nonetheless, it stroked my ego to think that 100 people out there in the world liked anything I was doing, and if you never look at it again and forget all about it, then, well, that's okay. Does your church have a small group made up of white liberals who are concerned about the problems of the world and who feel like the best way to solve them is to only talk about them? Then you need The Mediocre Courses, a set of DVDs where today's best non-tenure-track scholars talk about today's most complex problems. Your group of white liberals will feel smart and well-educated watching these DVDs and will enjoy a robust discussion using the included discussion questions. The best thing about The Mediocre Courses is that your white liberals will walk away feeling satisfied that they've accomplished something when all they really did was have a discussion with people who pretty much believe the same things that they do. You might be saying to yourself, don't we need to do more than just talk about a problem? Shouldn't we organize, protest, and force those who benefit from systems of oppression to enable opportunity and agency for marginalized people? If so, you must be something other than liberal and white. White liberals wouldn't have anything to do if they couldn't come together at their neighborhood Panera to complain about how bad things are. How could they feel smug and superior to conservatives if Rachel Maddow had nothing to talk about the night before? Talking about a complex problem is a great way to make yourself feel better about something without actually having to be responsible for changing any of it. With The Mediocre Courses, you'll hear scholars from all kinds of unaccredited universities and colleges talk about tough issues like racism. After all, white liberals don't see skin color, so if everyone could just think like they do, there wouldn't be a problem. Poverty. It's just horrible the way some people have to live. If only their children could go to a good suburban school like my son Reggie. World hunger. Wow, those pictures of starving kids in Central America are sure a bummer. I couldn't even enjoy my trip to Whole Foods after our last meeting because I just kept thinking about the lack of quinoa in their diets. Climate change. This is terrible. I heard one of those scholars talking about how most mutual funds invest in fossil fuels, and I was alarmed enough to think about changing my investments. Then when he said that since environmentally responsible investments tend to underperform, therefore few people use them, I realized there was no point in changing anything, especially since I need the money for my next beach vacation. Better go quick before the oceans rise. The Mediocre Courses are the answer for your church's white liberals. Once they have their small group meeting and talk about the tough issues, they will feel good about themselves. They won't feel like they have to take any kind of concrete steps to make the world a better place, and that way your church won't have to do any of that kind of stuff either. Everyone can be happy and feel good, because after all, Jesus loves you and never wants you to feel uncomfortable. Try Mediocre Books today. Just remember, I don't know what I'm doing with this podcast, and I don't have a whole lot of technology. I've only done 2 episodes so far. Got some good feedback from folks who said that they thought maybe in the last episode that I was talking too fast or had the speed wrong. Not sure what that's about. I was trying to write out more ahead of time and read it instead of just talking it out and wandering around. Maybe I was reading it too fast. Also, in editing out the uhs and the long pause and the breaths, that maybe I patched together the words too closely and it was too fast. Also, had some feedback that they liked what I was saying when I relaxed more into my preacher voice. I'm not exactly sure what that looks like, but my wife assures me I have one. So apparently that's a thing, and I'll try to shift there. I do have new technology coming. Right now, I am, for those of you who care about sound stuff, I'm recording it into my iPhone via a voice memo. So you can imagine that's not the greatest microphone in the world. Thanks to Jimmy Haas of Astoria, Queens, who was once in my youth group in New York, but is now an accomplished musician and videographer extraordinaire, had an extra microphone sitting around and sent it to me. So I've got like a $400 Shure microphone sitting on the desk in front of me, and he taught me what to buy to hook it up to my PC. And I was all ready to do it today, and I had no idea that it involved downloading a whole bunch of software to go with it. It's taking me hours because I have two sons and a wife and myself all using the internet at home. AT&T, my router is crappy. And so the bandwidth is low in my neighborhood because everybody's at home, and low in my house. And so it's taking forever. But all this is to say, on the next episode, maybe I will sound better and I will work on figuring out what my preacher voice does indeed sound like. Also, I would like to mention that you can, if you so choose, unwisely, I might add, support the Save Me podcast. You can go to our page on Anchor, and there's a button where you can click on it and knock a few dimes or bucks my way. Hopefully I'll get some better equipment out of it and production will increase. I want to recognize my very first so esteemed contributor, Ursel Harrison. Ursel, a long time, really good friend. Not very good with money, though. Clearly, he should have been giving the contribution to somewhere that's doing some good in the world. He's become a monthly contributor to the Save Me podcast. And for that, I am grateful. If you're interested in what Ursel is up to these days, you can check him out at Pinnacle Associates, which is a church consulting group that does good stuff. Well, maybe you've seen a poem circulating around on Facebook, like I have. Mine came from the esteemed Reverend Kelly Sasser of Watt Street's Baptist Church. Bit of a mystic, I think. It was no wonder that his feed on Facebook was the first place I saw it, and I'll read it to you. And the people stayed home and read books and listened and rested and exercised, and made art, and played games, and learned new ways of being, and were still, and listened more deeply. Some meditated, some prayed, some danced, some met their shadows, and the people began to think differently. And the people healed, and in the absence of people living in ignorant, dangerous, mindless, and heartless ways, the earth began to heal. And when the danger passed, and the people joined together again, they grieved their losses, and made new choices, and dreamed new images, and created new ways to live, and heal the earth fully, as they had been healed. The poet behind this beautiful poem about our days is Kitty O'Meara, last name O'Meara. And isn't that a prayer for what we wish this time would bring? Not just frantic hoping for the economy to open again and the stock market to go back up, but an entire change of our worldviews, and to use this time as fruitful time, so when we get to emerge from our houses again, that we are changed people. Well, I looked up O'Meara. I just assumed this was an old poem. I had no idea it was written during this quarantine. I found an article on Oprah Magazine on the internet. It's an interview by Elena Nicolaou, Nicolaou. You can find it there. This is what O'Meara says in the interview. I would invite people to pick an art form and go for it. People say all my life I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that. That's another huge gift of this time. Play with those things. Might be a dancing thing, might be a workout thing, might be a knitting thing, might be visual art. This is the time. Do it. And then the interviewer notes to Omira this is a time rife with frustration, as well as the potential for transformation, as her poem demonstrates. And Omira says, we can wallow where we are, or we can see the invitations. Anything that you can tap into that allows your feelings to be expressed creatively will do that for you. You will feel better on the other end of it. You will be changed, she says. Well, my artistic expression is coming out in this podcast. Whether or not you want to call it artistic or not, I guess is in the eye of the beholder or ear of the listener. Whether anybody or not ever gets anything out of these podcasts, I'm enjoying making it. Sort of like Omira says, I wanted to do it for a long time because I love podcasts so much. And so I'm doing it. And I hope wherever you are in this quarantine that you will have the courage to say, what the hell, I'm going to finally do what I've been meaning to do for a long time. Since I'm stuck at home going crazy, I'm going to turn off the TV, I'm going to turn off Trump, and I am going to do something new just for me. And whether anybody else in the world appreciates it, I'm going to do this because this is deep down inside of me. And I've got to let it out, and I've been neglecting it way too long. I grew up reading dystopian fiction and watching Mad Max movies, and growing up in the Cold War of Reagan's America was just sure that we were headed for thermonuclear war. We were going to have to battle it out in the wasteland afterwards. I think it was the equivalent of today's zombie movies, of wrestling with our fears and looking at worst-case scenarios and thinking, how would I survive when the bohawk-wearing henchmen with hobbled-together cars come to battle me on the highway? I've been interested to read a lot right now during the coronavirus outbreak. That there's a lot of evidence to show that we do not have to go the way of The Walking Dead. Robert Kirkman apparently has a pretty dark view of humanity. Had to stop watching that TV show because I just thought those people had suffered enough and it never got better. And we don't have to go the way of the road warrior, because evidence seems to show that people tend to rise to the occasion during disasters. And yeah, there's hoarding of toilet paper and the looting that takes place, but more often there are people who rise to the moment and want to do good and help their fellow people. I listened to a podcast, I think it's come out in the last couple of weeks, of The Gist, put out by Slate. There was an interview with the author Jamil Zaki, Z-A-K-I, and he has a book out called The Way to Kindness, Building Empathy in a Fractured World. I don't know if I'll ever buy the book or read it, but I want to, because Zaki had some fascinating things to say. And he cited all sorts of evidence from the 1918 Spanish influenza pandemic, to the San Francisco earthquake of 1905, to Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath, to 9/11, all sorts of things where people have come together, tried some pretty innovative and radical ways to help one another. People have a need to belong, be a part of something. I've been looking for examples of that. In the UK, they asked for volunteers to help with the national health system, and they had 750,000 people volunteer. The psychiatrist I see told me just this morning about a doctor he knows. My psychiatrist had a career working with the VA and was in the Army. He knows a lot of military doctors, and one of the ones he knows was recruiting doctors and got like 30 of them to go to New York to help out during this pandemic. NPR had a segment this morning on Good Friday. They had it 2 days early, in my opinion, about these nurses, 25 of them, going up from Atlanta to New York, and one of them told the heartbreaking stories of being with people dying alone in their last breaths, her reassuring families that their loved ones were not alone, that nurses like them were there with them. To me, that is resurrection as a verb. Well, in the past, I've read bits and pieces of the feminist writer Rebecca Solnit in that interview on the GIST podcast. Author I just mentioned said that Rebecca Solnit had actually written on this subject. Again, I haven't bought the book, all right? I went and found some stuff written about it. Found a nice thing in the Harvard Business Review by Bill Taylor. He's the co-founder of Fast Company, if you're familiar with that magazine. The title on HBR.com is How Bad Times Bring Out the Best in People. So I'm going to read a little bit of what Bill Taylor had to say. It's easy to look around and see how the COVID-19 crisis has brought out the worst in some people. From hoarding thousands of bottles of hand sanitizer, remember reading about those guys, to crowding bars and restaurants despite public health guidelines. But such irresponsible behavior, I believe, is more the exception than the rule. Time and again, individuals and communities have demonstrated that the worst situations tend to bring out the best in people and the organizations to which they belong. In every moment of darkness, it seems, there are countless moments of light, small gestures of compassion and connection that allow people to show who they are, how they want to live, and what matters to them. For her book, A Paradise Built in Hell, the celebrated nonfiction writer, Rebecca Solnit, the feminist scholar I was talking about, studied impromptu, spontaneous, bottom-up responses to some of the world's worst natural and man-made disasters. Deadly earthquakes in San Francisco and Mexico City, the Halifax explosion of 1917, the September 11th attacks. The history of disaster, she writes, demonstrates that most of us are social animals, hungry for connection as well as for purpose and meaning. A truly dire situation, as tragic as it is, drags us into emergencies that require we act, and act altruistically, bravely, and with initiative in order to survive or save our neighbors, no matter how we vote or what we do for a living. As I thought about Solnit's observations, I thought back to an act of business heroism. This is Taylor writing right now. He says, I thought back to an act of business heroism that brought her message to life. It happened during the depths of Hurricane Katrina, which famously ravaged New Orleans, but also devastated the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. For weeks and months, everyday life was a struggle, not just finding food, clothes, or diapers, but finding the money to pay for them. There was no electricity, so no way for credit card systems to work. Bank branches were flooded, and ATM machines were wrecked, so there was no way to get cash. From this desperate situation emerged an inspired response by employees at Hancock Bank, a community bank based in Gulfport, Mississippi, with roots back to 1899. In the days immediately after Katrina, bank employees, who had their own personal crises to deal with, scavenged the floors, drawers, and bank vaults in the 40 or so Hancock branches that had been obliterated by the storm, along with the waterlogged remains of local casinos. They scooped up all the wet, muddy, filthy cash they could find and stuffed it into plastic garbage bags. They hooked up washers and dryers to generators, set up rows of ironing boards, and gently cleaned and ironed the cash. They literally laundered money. Then they set up folding tables and tarps outside the branches and distributed cash to anyone who asked for it, even though hardly anyone had an ID, since all of their possessions had been washed away after all. There were no computer systems, so employees recorded the withdrawals on scraps of paper with each person's name, address, and social security number. Hancock's makeshift operation distributed more than $42 million in laundered cash, quote-unquote, laundered. As one in-depth news account noted, it was a scene, quote, that would make a mob boss proud. In reality, the grassroots expression of ingenuity and humanity made the bank and its customers proud. Hancock got back more than 99.5% of the cash it distributed. Its deposits and assets soared. When customers went to a branch to repay the money, or non-customers did the same, they were so grateful that they opened up a new account, added to an existing account, and used the bank for their next car loan or mortgage. Hancock CEO George Slogel told an oral history project that the attitude was, quote, "You were there when I needed you. You're going to be my bank," unquote. In the year after the storm, deposits in the Hancock Bank grew by $1.5 billion with a B dollars. The bottom line, practical, useful acts of kindness are good for humanity. And according to Taylor, who I guess knows this sort of thing, they are also good for business. Acts of kindness are also good for the people who do them, and the more tangible the act, the better. Taylor goes on and says, during the course of her research, Solnit analyzed the work of Charles E. Fritz, a giant of modern disaster studies, a field that emerged after World War II, and she was amazed by his views. Fritz's most radical premise, she explained, is that everyday life is already a disaster of sorts, one from which actual disaster liberates us, since it gives each of us the chance to express the best in ourselves. The merging of individual and societal needs during a disaster, Fritz argued, provides a feeling of belonging and a sense of unity rarely achieved under normal circumstances. Resurrection is a verb, and I believe in a universal Christ that's talked about in Colossians. That's in everything, that invigorates everything, and that wherever you find life and love and forgiveness, whenever you are surprised by joy, then you are encountering the Spirit of Christ in the world. And what God is up to is not limited to only those who call themselves Christian or who say the magic words. Resurrection is a verb. It's out there in the world. That's what Easter means, if we're dare enough to trust. So I hope that you follow those words out of the Harvard Business Review, words I just read that said, look, life is a disaster. And in times of actual disaster, like the one we're in right now, we have a chance to rethink it all. We have a chance to come out of this doing things differently. If we can find ways, even in this moment, to join together, work for the benefit of others that I'm seeing so many people do, our world can be different. We can be different. We can be in the business of resurrecting whether or not we believe in the resurrection. So if you're clergy and you're church people, what you're doing matters whether or not anybody validates you or not. Because you're trying to bring people together. You're trying to do something different and new. Don't just look forward to things going back to business as usual, back to the normal we had before. Dare to dream in a resurrected reality. Dare to dream of a different future for you in your life and the life of the people you love and serve around you. I'm trying really hard to do that, despite what I've been through in recent months, despite the pain that I still feel and feel like open, gaping wounds in my soul and psyche. Despite the blows I've taken to my confidence and my self-worth, I am trying to be resurrecting, trying to use this time not as time to sit around and wait for things to go back to the way they were. I'm trying, at least in my life, to think up a new way to live with God's help. I hope you are too, dear listener, whoever the heck you are. Doing this podcast means something to me, whether or not it means anything to anybody else. And I hope you find ways to express your spirit, your true self inside of you that you've been denying for a long time, that you use this time to be back in touch with who you are, the real you, the true you, and to do something, do lots of somethings that may not matter to anyone else, but help you to sing out and to dance and to live, do whatever it is that makes you real. Because we need people in the world who are willing to be real. So when you emerge out of this cocoon of self-quarantine, if you're fortunate enough to be one of those who gets to be stuck at home, you'll be somebody different, somebody new, somebody alive. And now, here's the benediction I've offered every Sunday for years, and I offer it at the end of each podcast. May the strength of Christ go before you to prepare your way. May the grace of Christ come behind you to finish what you must leave undone. May the peace of Christ surround you in this present moment And may the love of Christ guide your every word, your every thought, and your every deed. Amen. Thank you.